Our guest speaker this morning is Marilyn Moore, who will be speaking on how the West often misunderstands meditation. Letting ourselves be who we are without fear should be an initial goal when meditating. Through the practice of meditation, it is possible to cultivate a sense of friendliness toward our own mind, extend that friendliness to others, and establish a wholesome existence for ourselves and others. In the Shambhala tradition of Tibetan Buddhism, it is called creating an enlightened society. Ms. Moore teaches classes at the Shambhala Meditation Centers in Los Angeles. She also leads twice weekly meditation sessions at the Center of Living Peace in Irvine. The Shambhala principle is discovering humanity's hidden treasure, which poses questions of how we might create an enlightened society in everyday life. Let us welcome Marilyn Moore.
Well, I feel quite at home here already. You have a gong to ring, and it's quite interesting hearing this story from Mike Steiner, because I grew up as a Norwegian in Norwegian Lutheran and went to school in Minnesota. And so it's like hearing one of my classmates talk about his experience. However, for me, the trip from Lutheranism led to becoming a Buddhist, and a Shambhala Buddhist. So I'm just so delighted to be here. It feels wonderful seeing everybody and in this beautiful space on this lovely morning. The practice of meditation that I do is from a tradition called Shambhala, and that name may be unfamiliar. It's taken from a culture that may or may not have existed. It could have been a myth, or it could have been real. But it was a culture where people had a great deal of respect for humanity. And everyone in that culture practiced meditation and obtained a certain level of realization or awakeness. So its roots are in Tibetan Buddhism, but the teachings were developed for people who wanted to lead a secular life, who wanted to have a good life as human beings on this earth without going to a cave or a monastery, who were involved in their daily life in aspects of raising children, having jobs. And so how does one work with mind when you have, you know, a family to feed, a job to have, school to go to, and all of the ordinary things that we do? So when I tell people that I teach meditation, I seem to get one of two responses. One is that people say that, well, I've been told that would be good for me. In fact, my doctor told me that I should really meditate, but I really don't have the time. My life is so busy, there's just not a moment to spare. Or I might have someone say, yeah, I tried that, and I just don't have the right kind of mind for meditation. It's way too busy. I think a lot, so I just gave up on it. Or sometimes I'll just get people who say, really? You teach meditation? You look like my grandmother. And so the last one just makes me smile, but the first two make me sort of sad and a little frustrated, because it seems to reflect a sense of failure in ourselves to say that we can't do it. And I think that frustration, I feel, comes from the fact that we have a culture that portrays meditation in a way that sort of sets us up for failure. If you go on the internet, look at Google, and go for images of meditation, more than likely, I actually did this, most of the images seem to be of supermodel-like women, young, you know, blonde hair, sitting on a beach, you know, looking blissed out, you know, eyes closed and head raised to the sun. Or there might be a monk in robes, but it has really, those images have little to do with what meditation really is. It's for us. You know, it's not a fashion show. It's not becoming blissed out. So I was asked to speak on Tibetan Buddhism, but I really feel passionate about meditation. And the meditation that I practice is one that has its roots in Buddhism, but is something that can be practiced by anyone, no matter what their faith or their lack of religious beliefs may be. It doesn't have to do with religion so much as becoming fully human, a good human being. In fact, within our meditation center, we teach a series of weekend classes of meditation, and the very first one, the introduction one, is called The Art of Being Human. So I always love that title. So the instructions that we give, I mean, I'm curious. It just seems like there's so much meditative quality to what has been going on already this morning. I'm just wondering if I'm preaching to the choir and that all of you really know everything there is to know about meditation and I could just sit down again. But I mean, are there people here who actually have a meditation practice, do meditation? There are some. Yeah, okay. Well, for you, this may be nothing new, or it might be different, because there's so many different kinds of meditations. So I'm going to talk about what I know, which is the practice that we do in our Shambhala centers. And I was hoping that maybe you would be kind enough to just practice this with me. And I think you could do it for just 1 minute. It's somewhat instructive, even for a minute. And if you haven't done meditation, or much meditation, a minute can seem very long. So the instructions can get more complicated, but basically they're very, very simple. You simply sit still with a good posture, feeling somewhat dignified in your posture, not slouching over so you can actually breathe. And you place your attention on your breathing, not as a concept where you're thinking about breathing, but you actually feel what it is to breathe. You might feel your chest moving back and forth. You feel the air coming in and out of your nostrils. So you feel what it is to breathe in this body. And then you notice when thoughts come up. And the thoughts are whatever takes you away from having your attention on your breathing. They could be thoughts that are about the past, things that you have to do this afternoon. It doesn't matter. Whatever comes up, you simply bring yourself very gently, very kindly back to this feeling of the breath. And that's basically it. You do that over and over and over and over. And so maybe if you would indulge me, we'll just try this for just a very short time. I brought my smartphone. I thought I was going to have to ring a bell. I have a little app on my phone that has these wonderful timings for meditation. And here you have a bell. I'm just so pleased.
Okay. So just take that good posture. Put your attention on your feeling of your breathing. The other thing that I wanted to say,
The other thing I wanted to say was that in this particular meditation, we keep our eyes open. You'll often see the pictures of people meditating with their eyes closed. But the idea here is that we're not trying to shut out our world. We want to participate in our world. And so we don't meditate with earplugs. We don't meditate with our eyes closed. We have a soft gaze, which just means we're not focused on what we see. The gaze is downward somewhat, so we're not so distracted. And then we just allow our vision to take in whatever is in front of us without paying a lot of attention. So we're seeing without actively looking at what we're seeing. Okay, let's try it. One minute, but time can feel very different when you're actually spending it with yourself and not in distraction. So I just wanted to do that as a base for the other things that I'm going to say. So I thought I would just take some of the most common misunderstandings that I've run into with people having people dealing with meditation. And we've already taken care of the first one, because a lot of times people think that in order to do meditation, you have to sit on the floor on a cushion with your legs twisted up in a full lotus position. And we've just shown that you don't have to do that. You can sit comfortably on a bench, on a chair. And I advise my students often to do that, unless you have the right equipment and you have cushions that really work for you. It's better to sit in a chair. It's important to be comfortable. Meditation is not about pain, at least not physical pain. Things can come up, you can be uncomfortable, but it's not meant to be painful. So you can sit wherever you want. People do it if they have an office that they can close the door, they'll sit at their desk, they'll go to the park, sit on a bench. So it doesn't have to be this image of sitting with legs crossed on the floor. And then we've also dispelled another misconception that people have, is that meditation takes a lot of time. You can do very short sessions. I mean, 1 minute is actually pretty short, but we really didn't have time to go into more than that this morning. But really, we suggest that you try 10 minutes a day, and that's less than time than it takes you to drink a Starbucks grande double latte, you know. 10 minutes, it's not a lot of time. So finding the time to do it actually is knowing why you're doing it and then making it a priority. When we don't have time for things, it's usually because we don't really know why we're doing it and we don't make it a priority. So the benefits of meditation also don't have to be for years and years. You don't have to be doing this for a long time before you actually see some quote-unquote results. I have students who have meditated for such a short time, and they immediately see changes in their life. It's sort of funny, because in L.A., one of the first changes that people come to me about is traffic. It's like all of a sudden, traffic doesn't seem to be quite so irritating, and they have a less aggressive attitude toward the other people on the road. All of a sudden, people aren't cutting in front of them, because somehow they're just letting people in. So there's a more relaxed quality to the way that life is just unfolding. On the internet, there's just tons and tons of stories about scientific studies that have been done where people have meditated for very short times and things happen, like blood pressure goes down or various other physiological things happen. That's not my field of expertise, so I'm not going to go into those, but they are appearing a lot. But the most common misconception, I think, about meditation is that it's about getting rid of thoughts. And no matter how many times you tell people it's not about getting rid of thoughts, there's something in us that believes, yes, it really is. And then we set ourselves up for failure, because it's impossible. You cannot, as human beings, get completely rid of thoughts. It just doesn't happen. And in fact, in meditation, we don't really want it to happen, because the recognition of the thought and then allowing it to dissolve and letting it go is part of the practice. So we could relax with the fact that thoughts are going to come up and we see them and then we practice letting them go. So sometimes we begin to see that when thoughts stick around, especially ones we don't like, we're actually causing them to stick around. A thought is so ephemeral that it will just dissipate on itself, by itself, unless we pay so much attention to it, we keep it going. It's sort of hard to believe that we have a thought we say we don't like, and we're the ones that are keeping it alive, we're feeding it. So that's an interesting thing that we began to see, and that you can be told that, but you don't really believe it until you experience it. And you see that there is a very ephemeral quality to our thoughts. They're not as solid as we think. They don't define us in the way that we think they do. We believe our thoughts, and then we act on them, and we often make a mess of things because we do believe them so much. So sometimes the thoughts within our meditation tradition are described as clouds that are just floating through this vast space of mind. Very different from the sort of iron solid thought that I really hate my sister and I'm never going to talk to her again. It's much more liberating to have your thoughts be clouds that just can dissipate. So if you have a busy mind, it's just fine. You can have lots of opportunities for your thoughts to come up and get into practice letting them go. The idea is not to stop them. We do develop a different relationship with our thoughts. We become more friendly with our thoughts. If we do even just a little bit of meditation, we begin to see our internal chattering mind that just goes on and on and on. And a lot of that chatter, we find out, is very negative. And the negativity is directed toward ourselves, which is not very kind. So if we can let go of some of that chatter, let go of some of that unkindness that we have toward ourselves in our mental self-talking, we can begin to develop a friendliness toward ourselves, a friendliness toward our own mind. And that's a huge part of this meditation that I practice and teach. So another misunderstanding can be that meditation is self-indulgent escapism. And I know that a long time ago, before I became a meditator, I certainly believed this. My former husband was a meditator, and I was convinced that it was navel-gazing, and he was wasting his time, and he should have been home, not going on retreats, and I was pretty harsh about the whole thing. But it's sort of a 70s idea, I think, you know, this whole idea of navel-gazing. It's wasted time. But it is possible for people to use meditation as a way of escaping. Actually, it's possible to use any spiritual practice as a way of escaping. Escaping what we feel, escaping our life, instead of actually relating to what's going on with us. There's, I can't remember his name right now, I didn't write it down, but there's a psychologist in the 80s who called this kind of escapism that's possible to do with meditation, where we sit down and we get rid of the anything we don't want to think about. He called it spiritual bypass, which you may have heard that term before, but I love that term because it's so appropriate. We just sort of get this sort of blissed out thing from our practice, from our whatever that spiritual practice may be, but especially for meditation. And we don't ever deal with what's really going on with us. We don't ever go into what we're feeling. There are people, including myself, who could meditate for years without actually feeling what's going on. And it's very much about feeling. So not feeling is completely counter to the meditation that we do, the mindfulness meditation. Because it's very much about a present moment experience of whatever is happening. A present moment experience where we can embrace our life and our world, both the ugly things and the beautiful things. Because we're only embracing what we like, what's beautiful. We can shut out a huge part of our life and not live it. And that's a shame. This is our life. It's precious. It's really something that we could live all parts of it. So we have these thoughts and we have these feelings and we are letting go not of the feelings, not of the thoughts so much, but we're letting go of the stories that we tell about it. We might have a feeling, and then we make up a story about why we're feeling that way. And all those made-up stories create what sometimes we call a substitute life, We have this substitute life that we live of all these stories we've told about why things are happening to us and what's going on with this person or that situation and why we aren't getting promoted and why, you know, we don't have a house or a boyfriend or whatever it is. We have all this stuff going on. They're just made up stories and don't really have a lot to do with our real life, which is happening moment to moment, direct perception of what's going on. This is one of the reasons that this meditation is an eyes open meditation, because we are not interested in retreating or drawing back from the complexity of our world, which can be quite hard to look at sometimes. So with the eyes open, there's a sense that we're not separating ourselves from other people. And it also makes the transition from when we're doing our meditation to the post-meditation time a little easier. We're not hanging on to this precious little 10 minutes that we have of peace and happiness, and then we open up our eyes and, there's the world, you know, just as ugly as it was when I left it. Instead, there's a blending of our meditation and our world. So we call it our post-meditation experience, which means, you know, if you do 10 minutes of meditation, that's like 23 hours and 50 minutes that you're in post-meditation. But that's what it's all about. You know, the meditation is a practice for how we're going to live our lives in our everyday world. That's the only way that we can judge our meditation, whether it's working or not, is how are we living our life? And has this meditation affected the way that we live? Can we connect with other people? You know, can we actually see the anger arise and let it dissolve before we've done something stupid? You know, is it really making an imprint in our life? So it's not self-indulgent, but it's also not meant to be self-torture. So where we try to twist the mind into this beautiful, perfect bow that just won't stay tied, keeps unraveling. So we all seem to want to be good students. We're all intelligent people. We like to get a good grade. So meditation can become just one more way that we're trying to get a good grade. I'm going to do this right, you know, if it kills me. And that usually does kill the meditation, because you can't be aggressive in your technique of meditation. It just doesn't work. We're just promoting more aggression toward ourselves. We find it, meditation becomes one more way we don't measure up. So it comes from thinking that the technique itself is the goal, that we're really supposed to stay on the breath and we're never supposed to miss a thought, and we label each one of them and we come back to the breath just immediately. But it's not about that. It's about the process. It's about becoming familiar with our mind, finally seeing what's going on in our mind, and being willing, being courageous enough to look at it. With gentleness, we can't help but be mindful, because it's a natural quality that we have to be awake. It's said that being awake for a human being is like water being wet. We're really meant to be awake and alive in our life. We've just sort of forgotten how to do it. So the meditation is a reminder of what we already have, an awakeness and aliveness that already exists, and we're just rediscovering it. And we use the breath as a way to bring our attention to the present moment, to what it feels like to really be present now. Because we've forgotten what that's like. We spend our lives in distraction, and it's just a reminder. So it's an exercise we do to remind us how to be present in our everyday life. And finally, some people think that meditation should bring about some kind of transcendent experience. I mean, at least we should be hearing choirs of angels, or maybe floating up off our cushion, levitating, you know. But it's not that. I read a somewhat funny story recently about that, that there's a teacher who was teaching meditation in a prison. And there are lots of programs. Shambhala has a program where we go into prisons. We have one in men's jail in L.A. And it can be really quite a wonderful experience for people. But this particular teacher had an enormous number of people who showed, inmates who showed up for his first class, and he was so excited. And then he found out that there was a rumor going around the prison that if you really got to be a good meditator, you could levitate, and they were willing to give it a try. So it sounds sort of silly, but, you know, we have those kinds of ideas that maybe this kind of thing will happen, and what will it be like, and, you know, am I going to become enlightened, and then what's going to happen? But the real, as I said before, the real benefits of meditation have to do with just how we live our everyday life. We learn to carry the stillness that we contact in meditation with us into our lives. And we can at any moment take a breath and connect with the present moment, even just briefly. So for me, in some sense, I think of meditation as having to do with choices, or even discovering that we have choices. Often we don't have a lot to say with what happens to us. You know, we think that we're in control of our lives sometimes, but then something comes along that shows us we really don't have any control at all. You know, we lose a job, we lose a house, we have a relationship that ends, we get sick, somebody dies. You know, we have no control over those things, and it can feel startling. But what we do find out through meditation is that we do have a choice about our response to situation. So through meditation, our mind can connect with, again, what is natural to our minds, a natural strength and clarity that allows us to feel that life is workable, that no matter what's thrown at us, we can work with it. It might not be what we choose, but it's workable. So I was going to just tell a little story about myself. I was going to say something at the beginning, and it sounded like an excuse, but I'm severely jet-lagged. I came back from London on Friday night at a very, very long flight because I was supposed to get back on Wednesday, but I got to Gatwick Airport and opened up my passport for the person who's checking my bags to look at, and I saw my daughter's picture. It's like, definitely stopped my mind. It's like, how did this happen? It was unbelievable. Like, this can't be happening. You know, so I missed my flight. Obviously, she was an hour and a half away by the time she got back to the airport with the right passport, blah, blah, blah. It was too late. We figured out sort of what happened. We'd gone on a side trip to Ireland, and both of our passports had been slid over to the customs person at the ferry, and then she slid them back to us, but slid them back in the wrong order, and we just took them and didn't open them up. So it doesn't mean that I wasn't frustrated and tired and had all kinds of emotions that came around this, but I've been practicing long enough to be able to lighten up a bit about things when they don't go my way. And so it was not something that I felt I had to tell a story about. I didn't have to make that customs officer a bad person. And almost more importantly, I didn't have to make myself a bad person. You know, like, I'm getting older and senile and I can't even keep track of my passport. You know, I don't have to do that. So I didn't. You know, it might have come up just a little bit, but I let it go. So it was an interesting experience because it meant I was telling friends I was on an airline that's just started flying to LA called Norwegian. It's very appropriate. A lot of Scandinavian talk this morning. So Norwegian Airlines only flies to LA twice a week. And their next three flights were booked. Solid. So my daughter, as much as we love each other, didn't really want me to stay with her for another week and a half. And I had things to do, so I managed to get on a flight to New York, which got me at least to the right continent. And then I had to sleep in the airport in JFK, very uncomfortable for several hours, or at least try to sleep until I could get the flight out the next morning and get to L.A. So again, I could have really suffered. I mean, you know, physically I did suffer a bit. It wasn't good. I was trying to sleep in a chair. But mentally, I really didn't suffer all that much because this is just the way things were. I was able to see that I was tired, see that I was frustrated, see all the emotions that were coming up, but not buy into them to the point where I had to make a story out of it, which would make me suffer a lot. So that's my little story about how things could happen, and not always they happen that way, but I felt I should tell that because I should make something good out of that experience, and by telling a story, you know, it allows me to use it in a way that seems beneficial. And also it was interesting because by just allowing it to happen, other things happened. You know, my daughter and I had a great afternoon together that wasn't anticipated, a little extra time. We walked in a park, we had a Guinness together, and it was really lovely. And then when I got to the airport, the person at the gate said that I had been upgraded to business class without my asking. First time ever that I've flown business class, and I think I'm spoiled for life. It was really sweet. So I had the horrible part of sleeping in the airport and the most wonderful part of being on business class for the flight across the ocean. So, in summary, I think I should probably get to it. I'm over time. Sorry about that. I just feel that meditation allows us to see thoughts that we thought were solid, that they're more like turbulent waves on the surface of an ocean. And the mind really has the depth of an ocean. And we begin to feel that there's something basically good about our mind rather than it's not workable. So the mind becomes, it's not good as opposed to bad, but it's good as something that's workable, something that we could use. Within Shambhala, I feel like there's a really real kinship with what I'm seeing happen here because we are very devoted to working with other wisdom traditions because we see the things that are happening in our world. And we feel like Shambhala has something to offer in terms of the meditation practice that's available to everyone. But we definitely want to bring together the different traditions in the world that also have wisdom about how to work with the world as it is. And our world needs help. So banding together, we can really do more. And I mentioned that there's a quality of enlightened society that Shambhala works with. And this is an idea of not having a society that's sort of an impossible utopian. It's about having a community. It's a community like you have here, where people care about each other, where we examine our own minds. We are not operating out of fear. We're operating out of a sense of care for ourselves and care for other people. So the Dalai Lama at one point said that we don't need a world full of Buddhists, but we could use a world full of meditators. And I like that idea, and I agree with that idea. And I'm very inspired by the vision of a culture where educators, economists, health professionals, bankers, and even politicians could act based on the courage and the kindness and the wisdom that comes out of a mind that is awake and confident of its own goodness. So, thank you so much.